Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex,
sex. Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your word that baby preaching, cause here's the
Checkerfin.
Education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the Checkerfin. Education gadfly show.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, available online at edexcellence.net. Here with my co-host, a man some say is un-American, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, Bip?
So, Rick, are you a real American?
I'm not sure anymore. I know that there's parts of America that are more American than other parts.
Yes.
But I'm not sure which part I live in.
Well, there's also parts of Virginia that are real and other parts that are not. And I believe that you live in the unreal part of Virginia.
Now, the problem is, does this vary within a community? Like, if you live on the good side of the street, are you more American than if you live on the wrong side of the street?
Or if you have a flag out front, where does that happen, you know? Like, I live in Tacoma Park, Maryland, which I believe Sarah Palin would say is not part of real America, yet we fly an American flag. Let me ask you this. Did you sign the petition supporting Bill Ayers, as some of your other ed school friends did?
What petition?
Rick, are you so... Do you ever read blogs? Do you ever...
No. In fact, my staff is joining me. Morgan Goatley has sworn off blogs, too.
Oh,
I'm glad to say.
Interesting. All right. Well, it turns out that there is a petition circulating to support Bill Ayers. I noticed that number two on the list of supporters was Pedro Neguero.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pedro.
And basically, it says that Bill Ayers was just a Vietnam War protester.
Well, I would disagree with that, but this takes us back to what we talked about a long time ago. I mean, I thought this whole thing should be a non-issue in terms of both the national political debate and the education debate.
Mm-hmm.
And I sure as heck wouldn't sign a petition trying to excuse or justify what Ayers did.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think there's been a whole lot of cheap shot taken.
Well, that is true. And if you read blogs, you would know that actually the real radical education friend of Obama to keep your eye on is Michelle Rhee. And she continues to get press. She had a huge feature in The Atlantic this month. Did you notice that?
No. Who wrote it?
Who wrote the feature? Clay Risen.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well. Yep. Well, did he like Michelle?
He did. And he called her the lightning rod and the most influential educator in America right now.
Really?
And asked her if she would want to become Secretary of Education, said that people are talking about that in either McCain or Obama administration. She said, lots of people say I'm not even qualified for the job I have now. So you got to love that. You got to love that.
Well, and you've been a bit of a lightning rod the last couple of days. There's been a whole bunch of brouhaha. You and Eduonk, our good buddy Andy Rotherhan, have apparently gotten into a tussle.
Well, that is true. Last week, Andy and Sarah Mead released a paper outlining their vision for the federal role in education, assuming that they will be part of the Obama administration. I assume they're going to take that vision with them. What they want is to change the Office of Innovation and Improvement, which I had a role in helping to create, and change it, get this, into the Office of Education, Entrepreneurship, and Innovation, which to me sounds like a beautiful gift to you, Rick Hess, the father of education entrepreneurship.
So isn't this a good thing then?
Well, I don't mind them changing the name of the office, and that's all well and good, but they lay out this whole plan where they're going to grow what works and steer federal money to education entrepreneurs that show promise. Sounds to me a lot like picking winners and losers. I don't think they've learned some of the lessons from Reading First and various other efforts during the Bush years, showing that when you pick winners and losers, the losers, they don't tend to be happy, and they don't go quietly into the night, and oftentimes you are accused of political cronyism.
Mm.
Now, Andy's response is basically that, well, we Obama people are smarter than you Bush people, and so it won't be a problem.
And you're not buying it?
I'm not buying it, but stay tuned for more rebuttal on that front. Okay, well, we've got a lot to cover today. We are, of course, going to play Pardon the Gadfly. Then Amber is going to bring her research minute. By the way, last week it was only a research 55 seconds.
Mm.
So I don't know. Maybe she doesn't need a whole minute.
I'm holding out for 54 today, Bip.
I mean, maybe this is like, budgeting and public agencies, that if you don't use your whole budget, then you're going to lose it. So I think perhaps aiming for 54, if not 50 seconds.
Drive 55.
And Stafford is going to rate that reform. So let's get started. Christina, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Topic one, Louisiana is moving to create a grade 4.5 that would be a special program for fourth graders who fail the state test. They would receive remedial instruction in reading and math, but also get fifth grade content. If they then pass the test, they move on to sixth grade. Is this a reasonable tweak to the, quote, end social promotion, unquote, movement?
Michael J.?
First of all, Christina, we missed you. I mean,
I missed you too. It's nice to be back on air.
It is so good to have Christina back.
She's gifted, man.
She is. And, you know, part of what's happened is that we have a new media manager, Laura Pohl, who is producing the show today. And that allows Christina to return to her spot in the Pardon the Gadfly. And she's just got that NPR-esque quality to her.
She does. I gotta say, Laura's got this whole thing ship shape.
She does.
I feel more professional already.
I know. We've got this thing hooked up to Rick where if he backs away from the microphone, we send this electrical volt into his head.
Ouch!
Yes, there it is again. Okay, so grade 4.5. I think this is a great idea. I mean, this solves the problem, right? The problem with ending social promotion is that research was showing that if you just send kids back to repeat the grade, they didn't necessarily do any better. But the reason to end social promotion in the first place, if you just promote them to the next grade and they don't know the material, that's a mess also. So this seems like a great compromise. You know, have the kids basically in an ability group with other students who are also struggling to meet the standards, give them remediation, give them the fifth grade content, and if they succeed, boom, they move on to where they would have been anyways.
Jeez, you'd think somebody would have thought of this before.
Right? I mean, why haven't they?
I think they have. I think we've been doing it in theory for decades. I think nobody's thought of this good buzzword. You throw something like 4.5 on it, and you get some national press, and then we'll forget about it, and then they'll all go on to the next word, whether it's distributed leadership or human capital.
So cynical, Rick. So cynical. But is this new? I mean, the idea of we're going to put all of the kids together who are in the same boat in terms of failing the test. I mean, this is in some ways a return to the ability groups of old days.
Mm-hmm.
You're not buying it.
I mean, this is stuff that we thought was a good idea, you know, 40 years ago. It's harder to do it because you get a lot of push from parents and do-gooders.
Time is up.
Hey, makes perfect sense, but I just don't think there's anything new here.
Next one. The Obama campaign is talking about using student portfolios as part of the NCLB accountability system. Is this a good idea?
It's a horrible idea. You know, I've gotten into a little bit of trouble on this one this week too here, Rick.
Mike, you've been something of the lightning rod.
I guess I have been. I've been having some fun. So I was on the Diane Rehm show the other day talking about the president's education positions. And by the way, I have to say, this was a little shocking to me. I mean, as a fellow radio professional, mm-hmm. you know, I finally got to meet Diane Rehm. And I was alarmed that when Lisa Graham Keegan had called in for a brief interview and was explaining John McCain's education platform, Diane Rehm actually rolled her eyes. She rolled her eyes.
Why am I not surprised? She's never struck me as a particularly even-handed host.
Well, it was shocking to see in person. So then Melody Barnes from the Obama campaign came on and was talking about his position on No Child Left Behind and chose to bring up his support for alternative ways of assessing students and brought up the idea of portfolios. It sounded an awful lot to my ears like she was offering a new position, that he, in fact, would be open to replacing standardized testing as we know it with student portfolios. The campaign later said that I was out of line for reading it that way. But then last night, Linda Darling Hammond, in an Education Week debate with Lisa Graham Keegan, talked again about portfolios. So frankly, I'm not sure what the Obama campaign's position is. I suspect that they have different positions depending on which advisors you ask. But all that said, Rick, is this idea a good one? I mean, are portfolios a good idea? Is this a way to avoid teaching to the test?
Well, except that by the time you systematize a portfolio, it's an assessment. And then so you worry that people are teaching to the portfolios. Portfolios make all the sense in the world in theory. The problem is nobody's ever figured out how to really do what we call authentic assessment in a way that...
But I will say that Linda Darling Hammond last night argued that there are countries in Europe that use large-scale portfolios and that have been found to be reliable.
Depends what
is
you mean.
Is she just making stuff up again?
It depends what the meaning of portfolio is. If portfolios are large piles of student work and essays and everything else, no, nobody knows how to do that. If what she's saying is that it's something like the British examinations, where you've got much more thoughtful and sophisticated tests than most states use, I mean, you can call that a portfolio, I suppose, but that's not usually what we take to mean with the meaning of portfolio to be.
The right answer is yes, Linda Darling Hammond is making things up.
But Mike, you know, one other point here is that there is a sense about...
Oh, I'm sorry, Rick, we're out of time.
Hey. You know, if you filibuster, then you play your little games. That's okay.
Okay, Christina, topic number 3.
Let's talk about whether schools that are serving as polling places should close on election day. Is this a reasonable safety precaution in the Columbine era or extreme caution run amok?
Yeah, I don't care.
Rick, do you care about anything today? Well, you know, if you would read more, if you would actually not get your head out of a book once in a while,
we were
still current.
I mean, it was much more interesting to stay with the preceding conversation. Who cares? They're shutting down schools. It's retarded.
The reason we care is that kids are losing instructional time because some administrator is worried that having adults in their school is going to lead to some safety problems. That some adult's going to walk down the hallway and steal a kid.
Some madcap voter shows up with a shotgun and attacks a couple of kids. You'll be singing a different song.
I guess I would be. But I think this is ridiculous. I think there is also a little bit of a political motive here.
What's that?
Well, schools close on election day. Suddenly teachers have a lot of free time. We already know that teachers are a key constituent within the Democratic Party and very active volunteers. I mean, do you think this is an effort to have teachers have time to go out there and to do their politicking? I'm just trying to stir it up. All right, fine. Rick, would you like to say what you wanted to say about the last topic?
I can't even remember what it was.
All right. I think that schools should stay open on election day. It's a great opportunity for the kids to get to see the democratic process.
It does seem that people who show up at the polls are probably less likely to go on rampages through schools. And folks who are showing up to take advantage and wander into the school, it seems like it shouldn't be that much easier to get into the school under those circumstances than it did otherwise if we're policing effectively.
Though it is true that they say that the voters are very angry this year.
Who said that?
Well, I mean, everybody says it. The pundits say that.
Really?
Angry voters.
Okay.
You read newspapers? Rick, where have you been?
I don't know. I mean, all I've seen are numbers that Obama supporters are very enthusiastic, which I'm not sure translates into anger.
All right. Well, that's true. All right. Maybe I'm overstating that. So we better catch up. I think that means that perhaps, Amber, we're going to have to dock your minute.
Would you even dock me?
All right, Amber. Welcome, Amber, for our Research Minute.
You search, we search, research. It's the Gadfly Research Minute.
Okay, Amber, what are we talking about today?
Is this me? My time is officially started,
Your
or is
time?
That just a little segue?
I was just trying to trick you. Your time starts now.
All right. There's a report out this week from AIR. It's from a couple veteran researchers, and it's sure to get some attention given all of our talk about international benchmarks. It's called Counting on the Future, and it directly compares the performance of American students and international students using the same measuring stick. Researchers used what they call statistical linking methods to compare NAEP 2007 achievement data and international data from the same levels in countries that participated in TIMSS. Basically, they found that at grade 4, 5 nations, Singapore, Hong Kong, Chinese, Taipei, Japan, and Flemish Belgium significantly outperformed the U.S. in terms of the numbers of students achieving proficient or above as defined by NAEP. So no big surprises there. They also looked at countries participating in OECD. These are our economic competitors.
Now you really have 10 seconds.
They found that 3 of 11 districts, we care about this, Charlotte, Austin, and San Diego, outperformed above the OECD average. What districts were below the OECD average? Do we care? D.C., L.A., Chicago, Cleveland. Great report for anybody interested in looking at international comparable data.
So what's the song that goes along with your research?
Well, I figured Japan beats us all the time, and they always have. So I thought we all would like to hear a little bit from Japan's famous boy band. And their name is SMAP.
Okay.
And they're really, I got to tell you, they are indeed Japanese heartthrobs.
I know. I've heard Rick talk about them a lot.
SMAP.
SMAP. SMAP. Yeah. So, Amber, but I understand from the report, I know we had limited time, so perhaps you could not get into all of this, but but not only did a few of these cities perform below the OECD average, isn't it true that they performed on par with some third world countries?
That is true, and of course you're going to ask me a detail that you didn't prepare me for.
But, you know, Amber was focusing on the triumphal aspect. It's like, let's all get down and kneel at the feet of Charlotte Mech. That's beating the OECD average.
Here we go.
This is Houston. But Houston performed the same as it looks like Serbia and Romania and Slovenia. And so, yeah.
Well, I mean, the
those are the East European tigers.
Yeah, those countries do okay.
Armenia, yeah. Italy, Bulgaria, Malaysia, Latvia, Lithuania.
What about D.C.? D.C.'s way down the road.
Yeah, D.C. was looking...
We're naming the old Warsaw Pact and the old constituent republics of the USSR.
That's right. We used to fear those countries a lot. We thought that they were quite smart.
Mike, the 15 republics of the old USSR. Go.
Russia? Lithuania?
That's two right there, baby.
I'll get back to you.
DC was Slovenia, Norway, and Armenia performed the same as in...
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, so anyway.
This is a travesty. Let's go.
Okay, Amber. Well, thank you for your research minute. And it is now that time we wait for all week long. It's Rate That Reform time. You know, I didn't used to always say that, that we waited for it all week long, until Rate That Reform brought back some of that same fun-loving humor that the old Education News of the Weird brought back. What you got for us this week, Steph?
So I'll start by saying that school nutrition is a laudable endeavor. Salted by ads for junk food at every bus stop, rest stop, and gas station, it's no wonder that the United States has a childhood obesity problem. In fact, according to the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, 1/3 of children ages 2 to 19 were either overweight or risk of becoming so in 2004. According to Hershey's recently released sales reports and my own research and simple calculations, that number is probably closer to 50%. But fearless Los Angeles, hoping to blaze a path for its fellow districts, decided to address this problem with a worthy investment in a sushi robot. The TS4 Sushi Chef, to be specific. That's right, this fine piece of equipment would spew out California rolls by the dozens and provide the children of Los Angeles United School District with a nutritious lunch for the reasonable price of $13,000. So how did they pay for this contraption? Well, it's an investment, right? Something for the good of the students. So what do? They take the money out of the National School Lunch Program. You've probably heard of this particular USDA subsidy is the free and reduced lunch program. Yes, that's right. They spent $13,000 worth of free or reduced price lunches on a sushi robot. Let's do a little math, folks. The USDA reimburses districts $2.47 for each free lunch served and $2.07 for each reduced price lunch served. That means that LA spent the equivalent of 5,263 free lunches or 6,280 reduced price lunches on a sushi robot. It's a commendable endeavor to buy a sushi robot, except that the robot was promptly put into a storage closet and never used for 6 years. And district inspectors recently discovered the lonely bot in storage at the University High School. So I'll give this little robot storage situation an A for problem definition. No one's going to argue that childhood obesity is a serious problem. But as for execution, here's a big shocker, guys. F. First, they spend an exorbitant amount of money on a luxury item that then was never used. How many of the 300,000 students in the Los Angeles United School District actually be served with one sushi machine? Were they planning on using it in a central kitchen, or would the machine be rotated around to the different schools? And then they put it in a closet for 6 years after having spent $13,000 on it. What else is there to say?
Wow. Well, now, Stafford, in some ways, I feel like we're being a little too tough here. And here's why. Now, yes, $13,000 sounds like a lot of money until you consider how much money we probably spend on your typical lunch lady. And then you say, look, this is just merely making a capital investment. In most sectors, you know, you try to find ways to create efficiencies by investing in capital, perhaps to save money on labor. And so I would ask you, how much money would it cost to have real people, let's say even people flown in from Japan, making sushi? That would be expensive, much more than $13,000.
Mm-hmm. Because kids obviously need to be eating sushi. And obviously, the Los Angeles United School District provided a fund to pay for all the ingredients that go into sushi, including the raw fish, rice, and seaweed.
Oh, that didn't happen.
Sushi Thursday, baby.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Well, it is California. It's California rules.
I mean, school's always a pizza Friday. Mm-hmm. Mix it up a little bit to go, you know.
I want to know how the schools, I mean, was there like a lottery for having the machine passed around to the different schools? Were they going to make it in the central office? How are they going to pay for the transportation?
Yeah. No, that's a
it's kind of like, you know, when you have a taco day once a month or something. You could have, if you could hit 20 schools with just the one device.
Yeah. Well, you know, this story was first reported by Greg Tapo of USA Today on a blog that he doesn't have his own blog yet, but he was blogging on USA Today's health and fitness blog about this one. So we got to give him the shout out. He was very disappointed. I saw him the other day that if only this had been bought with an earmark, a federal earmark, then John McCain could be talking about it on the campaign trail instead of that overhead projector.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that the sushi machine is now in a culinary arts class in a vocational school.
Well, hopefully this is just going to give USA Today all the more reason to finally give Topo his own blog.
That is well said.
We're feeling for you, big dog.
That is well said. All right. Well, thank you, Stafford, for Rating That Reform. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget that we come to you every Thursday at edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.